Welcome to the Daily Canon Podcast.
Hello again, listeners. Welcome to another Daily Canon Weekly Podcast. It's me, your host, Matthew Wade. No more Stephen Bradley. Sorry. Anyway, joining me to stop you listening to me alone waffling on like a lunatic, I have Anita, all the way from Croatia, as ever. Hello, Anita.
Hello, hello.
And we also have JB at Gunnar Punner on Twitter, for those of you who are that way inclined. How the devil are you, sir?
Hello, how are you? I'm good. Thank you. I'm good.
I'm glad you're good. Wow.
That's a lie, but...
Well, the thing is, you can be good independently of things going around you. I mean, let's face it, Arsenal's a fucking clusterfuck at the moment. But generally, I'm quite good.
Otherwise, I'm also good.
Well, that's... I mean, fundamentally, that's probably more important, not to the necessarily to the listeners, but hey, if you want free content, you've got to endure me checking on how the other guys are. That's how this works. Right, enough of that endurance. We're going to obviously talk about Arsenal. This may not be a barrel of laughs, but no doubt we'll find lots of things to laugh about, although that may be out of bleakness and misery rather than joy and euphoria. But we'll see how we go. Since the last podcast, we've played some games, and they've been a little bit sort of different in feel to each other. So before we jump off the cliff of our league form, let's talk Europa League, because hey, that's the bit of the season where there's still something to talk about.
That's the part about joy and euphoria that you mentioned. Well, we do have joy and euphoria in Europa League still, even though it's not, you know, on the pitch as joyous as we would like. But I mean, we are in semi-final with a good result going into Valencia, the second leg.
I mean, I'm feeling quite smug, I have to admit, because I did call it 3-1 on last week's podcast, so there is recorded evidence.
Did you bet?
Of course not, because I'm actually so fucking green, I don't even know how a betting shop works.
That's not a bad thing.
Well, when you spend your life being poor, although betting shops do like to prey on the poor, I've worked out quite early on that I have very little money. So I don't want to spend any more on it, on giving it to people who know more about odds than I do, because that's what they do for a living. And also, there's been a couple of times when in my life where I've kind of told, I've actually asked them to put a bet on for me, they haven't, and then I would have won. And I've just thought, well, that's all my fucking good luck used up now, isn't it? So no, I didn't bet on it. Anyway, enough about me. What do we think about the Valencia tie? I mean, firstly, going into the game, what did you guys think of Valencia as a semi-final opponent?
I mean, it was one of those where I kind of feel like if it was a Champions League group game, I would have been really confident. But kind of reading about how Valencia played beforehand, I was a bit worried that they are quite an organised team. You know, we always do well against European sides that are kind of good in their league.
Yeah.
Because they try and play football against us and then we're actually quite good. I was a bit worried they were going to sit back and pick us off, which is kind of what happened. It was a really weird game in that, you know, they missed that open goal, they scored, and then they were basically, you know, I think we dominated, but they also were just happy with the goal. And actually, up until we scored our third, it was pretty much the perfect game from them. You know, I think we probably have the upper hand now, but they were a couple of minutes away from the perfect away performance in a knockout game.
Well, they certainly appeared to be quite happy to settle for losing 2-1 once the scoreline got to that, which of course ultimately was their undoing in terms of us getting that third goal. But yeah, it's sort of an interesting mindset, being willing to kind of, it's very much that professional two-legged mindset, isn't it? Being, okay, take the 2-1, get the away goal, get out of there. I mean, what about you, Anita? What were your immediate feelings both before the game and then also when the final whistle blew?
Yeah, I was really nervous the whole day before the match. And then when I saw how they line up, they had like, what, 5 or 6 defensive players. They were going for a bit of a defensive match at the Emirates, and then they scored. And I was like, oh my God, we will never get anything from this match. And as the match was going on, I was still thinking that this will end up like Atletico last season, when we were the better team, we had our chances, but we didn't use them, and then they equalized in the last minute. But thankfully, Aubameyang scored the third goal, and I think we have a really good chance, despite our away results. But I kind of, just like Valencia's the manager said before the match, that they are looking at our results against Napoli instead of the results in the league. That's how I feel about the Europa League as well, the return leg in Valencia. I think more about it like the Napoli away match rather than some match away from home in the league. I think that's the strong side of Emery. He does know how to play in Europa League, and hopefully he continues that.
Like Barter away, for example.
You picked one when we were just really awful. But I mean, Napoli away was just brilliantly played.
Yeah. I mean, it's
fine. It's beautiful, but, you know,
efficient. It's normally us conceding the last minute goal to lose the first leg 3-1. It's quite nice to be on the other foot this time.
Yeah, yeah. And despite the fact we were at the Emirates. So, you know, we actually go into a second leg with a chance. Of course, we also have, hopefully, I mean, let's not get too deep on this, but some of our players will have the experience and knowledge to know about the warnings of complacency. But again, that's a topic we'll no doubt touch on in more depth elsewhere. But anyway.
I mean, I think, look, if we score, you know, like 4 or 5 in the second leg, I think we'll be fine.
Maybe.
I mean, obviously, we, you know, historically as a club, we don't have a great record at the Mestalla. You know, everyone remembers, everyone old enough remembers John Carew basically knocking us out twice, I think, despite being an absolute cart horse. I mean, firstly, I suppose, what do we make of the performance against Valencia? And secondly, what do we think about the second leg? How do we feel going into it? Are we feeling confident? Are we still shitting ourselves, given everything else that's been going on? Question to whoever wants to answer it first.
You have that popular saying they use on Twitter a lot, bounce back. I'm pretty confident about that. I think that it will definitely be similar to Napoli away. We will probably play our first team, despite having, you know, Aubameyang and Lacazette playing against Brighton over the weekend. But I think that we can't really think too much about it and just go all in, because that's the only way to save this season.
Pretty much.
I mean, look, I think the first leg was a weird one in that I think often, you know, I think our players are better than they show a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, last Thursday showed that, you know, they almost sometimes forget how good they are. And it was like we conceded, and then actually once we bothered trying to play football, we got through them quite easily. And then they were like, oh shit, this is quite easy. You know, we scored a couple of goals and kind of controlled the game. And I guess in the away leg, hopefully it will play into our hands in that, you know, they have to try and score. You know, they have to score at least 2 goals. You know, I as with Napoli, I think I would have been really worried if we'd gone to Napoli and just tried to hold out for a draw or defend for the whole game. I think there will be openings for us because they have to commit, and that's better for us as the team we are than trying to see out a narrow lead or trying to, you know, go somewhere chasing a game and get hit on the break.
Well, particularly as for all the record that we'd heard about Valencia being good defensively in Spain and quite a tight team and picking quite a defensive lineup, I mean, they were no less porous at the back than we were, despite the fact they were playing a defensive lineup. Not necessarily the formation wasn't that defensive, but the lineup, although typically their fucking extra centre half scored their goal, but and nearly scored again. But that's the Arsenal way.
Ran through the middle of our team like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah. And just seemed to be incredibly affected by virtue of just being bigger than anyone in our team, which is kind of, come on, guys. But obviously, we find ourselves kind of going to that second game, as you say, knowing that the opposition are going to come at us. And I totally agree that the only way that's going to work for us is if we basically have the same plans against Napoli, which is, you know, keep tight in defence and midfield, but make sure that you don't waste any opportunities to break forward. You know, it's a game where you still want at least a 3 overtly attacking players in the pitch, but you also want your centre midfielders not to wander off too far. which I think is important. I mean, are you guys feeling confident, I guess, is what I'd ask you.
Yeah, I am. I am pretty confident about that. I just think that I hope that Emery can motivate the team, but now that I said it, I think that players should also motivate themselves, because this is probably their, I mean, not probably, but obviously their only chance to get a chance, last train to the Champions League next season. And if that's not a motivator enough for them, I'm really not sure what is.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting if you look at what the players have said in the interviews this week about the Champions League. Like, they don't want to play Europa League football. Apart from the impact on the league and apart from playing Sundays, like, they came to Arsenal to play in the Champions League. Like, look at Aubameyang's face after Sunday. Yeah. He would not have joined if he thought, he probably thought a good 6 months and we, you know, make top four last season.
Yeah.
And then, worst case, we'll go and get it easily this season. And you know, that hasn't happened. Socrates gave an interview last week where he basically said, we don't want to be playing in the Europa League.
Mm.
You know, whatever you think of the ability of our players, the more senior players we have are veterans of the Champions League and would probably not have joined Arsenal if they thought they were never going to play in it again. So I think there has to be this huge motivation inside them to get back to that level and prove that they belong there. Having said that, all we had to do was beat Brighton and Burnley, which must be an easier route to the Champions League than Valencia and Chelsea.
Indeed.
But, you know, they clearly didn't get up for that, or we'll get into that because it's probably beyond motivation, and I hate citing motivation as just the standalone thing. But yeah, like, you know, it's a weird one, right? If they want to play in the Champions League, they need to show it, and if they can't do it, they probably don't deserve it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's certainly quite apart from the Champions League being the carrot. Oh, small sirens in the background, London life. The Champions League carrot, quite apart from that, it's the semi-final and potentially the final of a fucking major European competition. You know, yes, it may not be the biggest cherry on the tree, but it's still a sizable cherry, and a sizable cherry that most people will never get to taste. You know, if I'm going to take my weird fruit metaphor,
I think that's a professionalism thing to it. Like, what we don't have, right, is a team like City and Liverpool that can turn up for a seemingly meaningless game and play like it matters, right? I think we have a group of, you know, people say we've become a cup team. I don't, you know, you can interpret that however you want, and I don't necessarily subscribe to that, but I think we've shown this season that we have players who can get up for individual games much better than they can kind of perform in easier games when there is not something tangible at the end of it. I think, and I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but we have players who are more likely to pull out a performance in a semi-final or final because you can see what you're playing for than turn up Burnley away on a Wednesday and knock them, you know, play them off the pitch.
Yes, exactly. It's that thing that, I mean, as Wenger always cited, the what defines greatness is the ability to keep doing it over a consistent period of time. And clearly a number of our players are not capable of that. But as you say, so much of the issues with our team, both defensively and also in terms of controlling matches, is about concentration, it's about focus. And if you can't be focused in a situation where the size of the task ahead of you is self-evident, but yet there's nothing to feel defeatist about. I mean, it's one thing being focused, going up and playing away at Man City when they're flying and going, yeah, we'll really try and be concentrated, but you don't really believe you're going to beat them because they're better than you. But it's another thing when you have that requirement for concentration against a team that basically you have an equality of aptitude to, or perhaps slightly, you know, against Valencia, we should be slight favourites, you know, for all our troubles. We're still no worse in the Premier League than they are in the Spanish League, and the Premier League is a more challenging league. We've got more points than they have so far this season, and we've got more players who have at least experience of the absolute top level, and not necessarily fundamentally better, but you know, there are more players who can play the show me your medals game quite successfully, even though we've got some that may never get to be very good at that particular game. But as well as that, there is also the fact that the prospect of a final against Chelsea, who, you know, we haven't been too bad against in recent seasons. You know, we beat them in a cup final, obviously, a couple of years ago. Yes, we lost narrowly at their place in the league this season, but we beat them pretty comfortably at home.
With Aaron Ramsey.
With Aaron Ramsey and with Hector Bellerin as well. But that's another thing. But and Rob Holding, dare I say it, or at least in the cup final. But, you know, Chelsea, as we've seen this season, are no more consistent than we are and are still massively reliant on Eden Hazard. So it's not as if the prospect of getting to a final is then to be playing against Barcelona at the Nou Camp, where you're going, well, fucking, it doesn't really matter. You know, it's one where you're going, there's a very real chance of getting to the final, and then there's a 50-50 chance in the final against a team who are incredibly similar to us in ability level, both over an extended period of time and off in a one-off game. So, yeah.
I wonder how, like, obviously now, with hindsight, the league was our best chance of getting the Champions League.
For shizzle.
You go back a month ago or 6 weeks ago,
yeah.
There's no way you would believe that teams around us would have been as bad as they have been.
Yeah.
I wonder if we just chose to focus on Europe and then kind of, you know, sacked off the league prematurely and essentially cost ourselves that. I don't know if you can read that much into it. Like, we still should have won half the games we've had in the last month, but, you know, mentally, I don't know if a call was made that actually everyone just focused on Europe and we gave up on the league.
I don't believe so, judging by what players have said in the press and judging by their reactions at the weekend. But what I do think happened was that, you know, because of the lack of quality in certain areas of the squad and because of some of the injuries, there hasn't been able to rotate as much as you normally would in this scenario. You know, you look at the teams around us, they're all more able to rotate than us. Okay, Spurs have had their injury problems, but it's the first time in like four fucking years, so they don't get any sympathy from me. But the, you know, there are quite a few players who look either physically fatigued or mentally fatigued. And the thing about the Premier League that makes it so much more difficult than any other league is there's a much greater quality of financial distribution. So every club except for the bottom clubs has at least one or two really good players. And then on top of that, the physical intensity is incredibly difficult to fight against, isn't it? I mean, you look at you know, Spain or Germany, the top teams turn up to the bottom teams, and okay, once in a blue moon, there's a freak result. But basically, it's, you know, or Juventus in Italy, it's get your fags out, get your coffee, and walk through the midfield of the opposition who've got full of people who no one's ever fucking heard of and will never play at that level again.
You know, you see that in Europe, it's quite funny, right? You know, these teams win games after 70 minutes most weeks. Their players don't have to play at an intense level for 90.
Exactly.
Often, when they come up against English teams in Europe, they might play them off the park for the first hour. And then you generally see the Premier League teams have finish games well against European sides.
Yeah.
Because that intensity fades, and that's when you get that kind of catch up. Which is what we, you know, obviously some of the games against Barca and Bayern, we were already a few goals down by that point. But there are other games, you know, some of the ones we've beaten them at, where basically we have just managed to push through a full 90 at a higher level than them.
Yeah.
And the ones we've won or played well in or drawn is because teams can't keep up for the full game, which is interesting to see.
Yeah, you're totally right. I mean, you look at our European history, and a lot of it is just staying in games, staying. You know, it's basically when the opposition. I mean, it's so much. It's like the George Graham template. It's like, just make sure that you don't concede, and then you will get chances because the opposition will tire.
Do you think that the fatigue and everything you mentioned now had the Emery's decisions, the lineups he put out on starting lineups he put out in Premier League had some influence on that? Because we often found ourselves, you know, chasing a result in second half and having to play other players that might have been rested for the Europa League or anything, something like that.
I mean, I don't know what you think, JB, but I think that's bang on the money. But I don't put the responsibility entirely on the manager. I mean, ultimately, you know, he has attempted to rotate this season, but when he has done, the players that have been coming in generally haven't been good enough, and therefore it's been kind of send for the cavalry, and suddenly at half time you've got the three first teamers you're trying to rest coming off the bench because you've been reminded that actually Elneny is not a top level Premier League footballer, or Jenkinson is actually leaving the club for a reason or whatever.
So I don't think we've been as able to rotate as we would ideally have liked to be.
Yeah.
But I also don't think Emery's been as smart about how he has rotated within those confines as he could or should have been.
Agreed.
For example, the Palace game versus the Wolves game,
yeah,
if you reverse that, you get very different results. Or, you know, simple things like actually play your better players from the start, go a goal or two up, and then get some kids on or whatever. Like, there are many ways in the past we've seen teams rotate that are not rotate four or five players out of the starting lineup and play some reserves. There are smarter ways of doing it. I fully accept that we've had injuries at right back, injuries at centre back, injuries in central midfield, only two strikers, plus Nketiah, who keeps travelling with the squad and then not playing in reserve games either, and basically doing what Jeff did, and we're going to screw him. However, even within the confines of injuries, etc., I don't think Emery's been as smart as other managers might have been.
Yeah, here's a question for you both then. Do you think that in coming in from a background in Spain and France, that Unai Emery has underestimated the difficulty of the Premier League?
Well, it's a cliche, you know, you often say when new players come to the Premier League from other leagues, they need some time to adapt. I think it's same or similar for managers as well, because it's very different league than the others, especially he came from PSG, where he was basically, you know, running the league, doing everything. Basically, they were only good club there. I mean, you could say so, but...
I was going to say Lana's going to be getting angry at that one.
So I think, yeah, maybe he did a bit underestimated him, but there were so many different factors that you already mentioned, the injuries and everything, which we had over the last few seasons as well. But I think that in general, just this team needs lots of work, and the players that were supposed to be there for the rotations and everything are not really good in general.
I think it's just a bit oversimplistic maybe to say he's underestimated the league, because I don't know. Like, I don't know what that would look like. I think there's a lot of problems we've had this season. I don't know. You know, I think underestimating the league is, yeah, like putting your reserves out and losing. But I don't think he's done that until the end of the season. I think he's probably played as strong a team as he could on most occasions.
I can see that in the way how we played a lot better against the bigger teams, which we struggled with over the last few seasons, and we performed well against them. And that those are a few matches that I did enjoy watching us play this season. While against the, you know, smaller teams, the air quotes, which we usually tend to, you know, do well, do the job, get the wins, but we have struggled a lot this season against them at home and away as well.
Yeah.
So in that way, I think that he underestimated the league, you know, because this is where in Premier League you can get the bottom team, like perhaps Huddersfield over the weekend against Manchester United. They, you know, show up, even though there is not much left to play, but they will show up, they will play okay or even good, and especially when they see they can get something, some result in the match, they will, you know, push forward. So I think that in that way he perhaps underestimated, you know, the strength of the lower table things.
It's funny because I see that as the opposite almost. I think he's underestimated what he's being expected to do. I think he's probably shown too much respect for the smaller teams. I think, you know, Arsenal should not be turning up against any team in the bottom half of the league and looking to hit them on the break, or kind of looking to neutralise them and keep it quiet for the first 20. So I think he's done badly against the worst teams, but I often think that's a function of allowing them to grow in confidence by being far too cautious against them, when in reality, I would expect an Arsenal manager to give them nothing. Now, people have different expectations on style, and I would prefer an Arsenal manager to come and play these guys off the park, knock the ball around, make them run a lot. They get nowhere near the ball and we score four or five goals, right? I know that won't happen every game. Other people would happily have like an Antonio Conte approach and, you know, be more solid defensively, but ultimately give them nothing. I don't like the way that we have gone into games against weaker teams in the league this season and treated them like they are our equals. I don't like the fact that when we draw or lose against lower league teams or lower placed teams in the league, he's basically been like, and again, this might be translation, but he's basically been like, oh, you know, Wolves are a good team, or it's okay, Brighton are a good team, they defended well. Like, so what, they defended well? We're Arsenal. If you can't set the players we have up to create more than two shots on target in the first hour against these teams, I worry. We'll get on to
a whole other question. We'll definitely get on to that. I mean, obviously, the I'm sort of doing that thing of being wary of heading too far down the narrative spinning wheel, because obviously this season may yet turn out to be a success, despite the fact that at the moment, at this exact moment in time, it feels like a clusterfuck. And also, we've got to keep some powder dry for an end-of-season review, frankly. but yeah, there is... I think you're both right in that. I think that, for me, I think he has been far too cautious in a lot of games, both in terms of tactical setup, but also mentality. I mean, I think that's partly a reflection of the fact that we don't we've got the least number of genuinely creative players that we've had in an Arsenal squad and since before Wenger arrived. But also, I think there is something about. I feel that towards the end of the season, and it's a mistake that a lot of managers make. You have that kind of intensity, and then you hit April and you're like, and everyone's fucked. And I think there's been an element of that. I think it's a case of not necessarily underestimating, but I don't think he's known quite how to pace it, because the last, I mean, some of our players aren't great. And yes, some of the reserve players are not good enough for this level. And some of them are just prone to stupid shit. And some of the other teams we played against are quite good. But for me, we've looked quite shagged. You know, the players have little bit sharpness, you know, to coin a phrase. You know, the way that Emery's got the team set up is not going to create chances in the same way that Arsene Wenger's teams did, because it's not so much the raison d'etre. But I think because of that, it means that it's even more reliant on players being on it and sharp and having that touch and to be able to actually make the most of opportunities. And frankly, if it wasn't for the fact we've got two very, very dangerous, although occasionally inconsistent, strikers, we would be finding ourselves in a much worse place at the moment, because we've created fuck all. And to be honest, the back end of last season, we were really struggling to create, except for when we occasionally got a late end of season team on the beach scenario. So I think it's partly managerial mentality, partly because obviously we had this, you know, Emery came in with this high pressing and blah, 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 and it's been abandoned slowly as the season's gone on. And it's clear that either the players haven't been able to adjust to it, or he's worked out it doesn't really work in the way he wants it to, or that just everyone's just got too tired because they fucking went for it. Because we're all reading the reports about how they were working their nuts off in every training session from the moment he walked through the door. And for me, that's caught up with us a little bit, in the same way that it has done with, you know, to a certain degree, Spurs as well, with their shallow squad and their intense methods as well.
It's interesting. I think the pressing one, I kind of feel like we abandoned the press quite early in the season. We've used it in like select big games.
Exactly. We abandoned it, and then it's occasionally reappeared like a like a zombie.
It kind of works quite well, and it's like, we'll just do this a bit more.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, the flip side of that, when you talk about burnout, is you run less if you have the ball. So why don't we just be a bit more of a big team and not spend half the game without the ball? The pressing fatigue thing is quite interesting, because I think there's been quite a lot on how Liverpool have actually pressed a lot less this season. Been a lot more selective with it. A, as a way of controlling games, but also B, just as a kind of perform over 90 minutes by pressing in bursts rather than kind of go at teams from the first minute and be knackered by the end.
And also not being so totally predictable in terms of how you're trying to combat an opponent. You know, if you do the same thing every game, week in, week out, then you will occasionally lose games to teams who are just going to go, well, that's going to happen, so we'll just do this.
Yeah. Yeah, and like Liverpool became vulnerable to the long ball because people would, all right, we'll just go over the press. Which I get, but I think I wouldn't have minded the press being abandoned if it was replaced by something. And kind of just an absence of, like, I watch us every week, and it's not often clear what we're trying to do or how we're trying to. There's like a bit of we'll get an overlap and we'll kind of play the ball on the floor across the box, and there's a bit of like we'll kind of commit dirty fouls to stop people countering, but there's not a lot more than that going on visibly.
Yeah, I mean, it's and this kind of takes us on to other questions which no doubt everyone's been wanting to hear about and we've been wanting to talk about, which is where is the delineation between the responsibility of the manager and the responsibility of the players, you know? Because it's true, there's been quite a lot of games this season you're kind of like, well, we've got some good players, but I can't tell really what they're trying to achieve as a collective unit. But then we also saw that quite a lot last season under Wenger, who has always had a style and a collective endeavour. So is it just that the players collectively aren't good enough? Is it that the Emery is not doing a good enough job at trying to bring whatever his philosophy is, although a lot of his philosophy seems to be about flexibility, which is not really a philosophy in the same way that we are used to as fans of the Wenger era, and even under George Graham, where the clarity of from an external clarity of what's going on was much easier to ascertain. I mean, looking where we are now, because obviously the tide of public opinion is starting to drain away from our Spaniard in charge a little bit at this stage. You know, some of the more prominent bloggers have been fairly overtly critical of him for some time now. Even the mainstream newspapers have started hitting that angle now. Where do you guys sit?
I agree with what you said. We had several of these conversations last season as well. Is it the manager? Is it the players? Will something change when Wenger leaves, or will we have the same thing over and over again? And logically, you have this conclusion. It's two different managers, the same players, and the same things happen all over again during this season. So perhaps it is about players, but I mean, just in general, you see the mood around the club is really odd. It's hard to, you don't expect in many matches that our players will just get together and turn over the match and do something together on the pitch. Maybe the manager needs to work on that as well a bit, but I still think that we need to a few more quality players, and that should probably improve, but I'm not sure if that will happen this summer, and I'm not sure if Emery is the one to, lead the change.
last year, starting point, right, the general consensus was that the players were good enough to do better than they did. Therefore, the manager was underperforming probably for more than one season, as much as I loved him. And it was the right time to make a change, because a manager who was good enough would have been getting more out of those players and either winning things or at least coming top four, right? Therefore, before we get on to what we've done this season, the premise of this was, well, if we got the right guy with the same players, we should do better. I think it's very hard to argue that we have done better this season. I think we've got 4 points more. We've got a worse defence. We're worse offensively. There's no visible plan. There wasn't an enormous one last season. it's hard to argue we've improved. And I'm not entirely sure what he's trying to achieve. I would just like some evidence that we changed manager a year ago.
The press conferences are a good proof of that, because now they're impossible to listen to.
Undeniably, some of the players are not good enough, but they are absolutely good enough to challenge better for the top four. They are absolutely better enough to have beaten Brighton at Palace at home when it mattered. And they are absolutely good enough to create chances in games against teams that are a lot worse than us. Like, I don't think that's too much to ask.
I suppose that's one of the bizarre things about this season is that we got to a point, partly through positive endeavours from this team and partly from the result of the incompetence of others around us, that actually, as bizarre though it sounds, like if there's part of you that really wishes that about 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago they'd just parachuted Arsene Wenger in for the end of the season.
I don't want to go all Solskjaer on it. Someone in who, just with the players we have, because we know how they are inclined to play.
Yeah.
For the last 2 months, if we'd had a manager who would just send our players out and be like, just go and have fun. Mm-hmm. I think there's a better chance.
Couldn't have been any worse.
Yeah. I mean, and on that, I think it's my other point. I was trying to, you know, I had a good chat with Gunnerblog on this yesterday. Everyone's like, what is the expectation, right? The expectation would be, aside from visible performance, the results expectation would be some improvement, some challenge for top four maybe, and a cup run, right? But then I was thinking, realistically, the worst possible season a manager could have with this club is sixth and no trophy.
Yep.
We weren't going to come seventh.
But Man United have stolen that prize from us.
I know. But if this meets expectations and no one expected more than this, what was the point in changing manager? Because I don't think we could, unless we win the Europa, I think we're in a position where I don't think it's possible to finish worse with Arsenal.
Okay, well, that very handily leads me on to exactly my next question, which is, for you, both of you, do you think that Unai Emery being manager next season should be dependent on what happens in the Europa League from here on in? You may have to answer with words. I know that I can see you, but the listeners can't.
That's a tough one. I'm not a fan of changing managers like socks every now and then. But I've mentioned several times that I haven't really enjoyed watching Arsenal play over this season. And I've seen a lot of my friends from London and all over the world saying that they are not enjoying the matches as well as they did, you know, not last season obviously, but the seasons before, and that really bothers me. But then again, you know, one season, we have been really shit over the last few seasons, and is this one season, this one, basically one and a half transfer windows enough for do anything with this team? Perhaps he needs one more season, one more chance.
Particularly as one of those transfer windows is only allowed to take fucking Denis Suarez on loan.
That was fantastic. Buy Suarez permanently. I think that's the only.
Yeah, well, touche. What's your stance, JD?
I do like the guy. I did want him to do well. I just feel like if we don't win the Europa, it comes back to what are we trying to achieve, right?
Mm.
And I was saying, even if we didn't win anything this season, everyone was so optimistic at the start. Everyone bought into this vision that he gave, high pressing, protecting, et cetera, et cetera. There was something to get the fans united. And I just want to enjoy watching Arsenal, right? At the base level.
It's supposed to be fun, yeah.
Yeah, like it's a hobby, right? We choose to do this. It's gone from something I really look forward to every week to you do it because you feel like you should.
Yeah.
And it's not about the results. It's about even when we win 1-0 at home against Cardiff or Huddersfield or whoever it is, it's just dire. And I don't, like, is that who he is? Or if you give him 200 million... Well, that's another question. If you give him
50 million.
If you give him a few signings,
Do
we play differently? If you give him any player in the world he wants, do we play differently? I don't know.
That's the thing, we don't know.
I would have liked is a bit of evidence this season that might be the case. Like, Klopp and Pep had pretty average first seasons, but inside 6 months, it was very obvious what they were trying to do. And it didn't always work, but people could buy into something.
Mm.
Get the money they had, forget the signings they had, their team started pressing, they started playing a different way, and people were like, it might take a few years, but actually, we can see where this is going. We've had a year,
yeah, yeah.
And I have absolutely no clue
I mean, I think that's the real thing, isn't it? I mean, one of the things that defines all this is the fact that we had our really, really good run a while ago. And since that really good run, it's all been a bit waiting for things to fall off the car as it trundles down the street. And slowly more and more things have been falling off. And now we're at a stage where it's very hard to feel, unless you win the Europa League, it's very hard to feel positive about anything that's happened in the last few months.
But the really good run was a good run of results. It wasn't a good run of performances.
But had we gone from starting the season, new manager, oh God, it's all crap, to then going on a good run of results, it would feel like progression. But because we've had the good run of results, because let's face it, when people are wanting Wenger to leave, no one was wanting Wenger to leave because they didn't agree with his attempts to make the football attractive, even if it wasn't working by the end. They wanted him to leave because they didn't believe in his ability to get results anymore. And if you'd had a great run of results, even no matter regardless of the opposition, at the end of the season, you'd be feeling, okay, well, we've achieved something we weren't achieving before. But as you rightly say, we're in a situation now where the end of this season, unless he wins the Europa League, is like a slightly crapper version of the end of the last three or four seasons.
Here's one for you. What is Unai Emery's ceiling?
Well, this is the thing. We don't know, because at Sevilla, he was managing a club that its ceiling was, he was always near their ceiling, because they're a team that are always going to be outside the Champions League places unless they have a really good year. And they're basically a Europa League club, or just below a Europa League club. That's their size, that's their budget, that's their resources, that's their tradition. And at PSG, he went to PSG, and the first season, this amazing Monaco team that set all kinds of records for points came out of fucking nowhere and went and won like 20 games in a row that no one saw coming. And then the second season at PSG, it was, as I say, it was, you know, beach loungers and fucking turn up, win the league.
Well, he brought Monaco's best player as well.
Well, yeah. but Monaco had already sold off three or four of the other players anyway by then. So it's almost impossible for us to know, because he's only experienced, unless you look at his brief sojourn in Russia, which, let's face it, is nothing to judge anything by, or his brief period at Valencia where he was reasonably successful. But in terms of proper managerial stints in recent times, we've seen him do about as well as you'd expect, or a bit better, with a team with limited ambition, a club with limited ambition, or do about as well as you'd expect with a team with infinite resources. But neither of those are equatable to our position. so it's like, how do you relate that, particularly when he's going to be the first new manager to go into a big club that needs renewal without having like a big transfer budget backing him up as well? So that also makes it very hard. And also the fact we know that some of the players that arrived without him having any say in it. So it's the thing, is we genuinely don't know what an Unai Emery player is. We don't know, because he's not going to be able to get the players he had at PSG, because they could throw £200 million at a problem whenever they wanted to. He's going to want players better than he had for the most part at Sevilla, because we've already got players of that level in the squad already, for the most part. So I don't know how anyone can realistically attempt to make a judgment on that, unless you go really deep into some sort of statistical analysis. But even then, you're discovering trends, not equivalences.
So all we can go off is what we've seen, right?
Yeah. And what we've seen, and a bit of faith. Yeah, that's all we've got. Yeah.
And when he came, no one thought he was going to get $100 or $200 million, right?
No.
It was one of the reasons we hired this guy is because he's a coach.
Yeah. Exactly.
And he's going to improve our players and maybe improve the collective and get us playing as, you know, better than some of our parts, etc., etc. So I feel like it's not unrealistic to expect, in isolation of signings and results, evidence of that.
And I suppose the only evidence of that we have is we saw some improvement in... So sadly, most of the players he improved got injured. Because Holding and Bellerin definitely took step forwards, but got injured. Welbeck was looking the best he'd looked in a number of years, and he got, obviously, another serious injury. We saw some big improvement from Iwobi, which has then since regressed as the team has fallen apart a bit. And we've seen some improvement from Lacazette, but that may have been organic anyway. And everyone else has been about the same or slightly dropped off by the looks of it. I mean, I don't know, would you agree with that assessment, Anita?
My biggest regret about Demery over this season is how he kind of ghosted Ramsey and Ezel for a lot, big chunks of the season, especially Ramsey. I think that he missed a few good games with that. I think that it could have been a bit better if he used him more. I mean, obviously, you know, he is leaving at the end of the season. Do you want to kind of build the team around him and have players play with him? But obviously, whenever he played, we looked much better. And I think that's my biggest regret over this season. Maybe it wouldn't be different, but I mean, you don't ever know. You have a player like Ramsey sitting on the bench and not using him. That was just seemed silly for me over this season. And Ezel is always the talking point. You can talk about him in several different podcasts. If he's that kind of player, if he's worth it, if he's, you know, luxury player or something like that. But I just think that maybe if they got to play a bit more, it could have been a bit different. But I wanted to mention that you talk about how he's, do we trust him with the money for transfers? He will never get 200 million, as you mentioned, JB, but is that enough? I mean, you mentioned Klopp and Pep and their first seasons at Liverpool and City. I think that, sadly, these days in modern football, in Premier League, perhaps you need a combination of a really, really good manager / head coach and a really, really good transfer budget.
Yeah,
We're not asking to win the league. Like, I don't think we need to work miracles to make the top four.
Yeah, but when you look at, for example, Manchester United, they had a really, really good transfer budget and not really good managers and coaches, and they are in the same situation as we are. While you have Liverpool and City, who have both good transfer budget and good managers. Maybe
I suppose
that's the one way.
I suppose the lie here, the thing that is, and of course it hurts us more, is the team that are proving that you can overachieve are the noisy neighbours. And unfortunately, while they, they've been so fucking lucky all season this season. I mean, how the hell they've managed to limp to where they've got to is extraordinary. But I mean, it's partly because everyone else is so flawed, and partly because, well, I'm not going to get into other things, but. You know, while they continue to be slightly more successful than us in the immediate term, despite Paul Merson's epic thug life moment on Sky Sports, which is one of my favourite shared things on Twitter this week, that's the thing, that every Arsenal manager is, whoever it's going to be, is going to be haunted by that ghost until they do better than Spurs are, because Spurs haven't spent any money or have spent very little money in two seasons and have sustained a level better than we are. And that shows it can be done. Yes, perhaps their squad is less totally fucking imbalanced and insanely assembled and has some kind of cohesive strategy behind its assemblage, but nonetheless, they have proved that it can be achieved to some degree. And of course, we should be able to do better than that because we have slightly better resources. And, you know, the starting point that Spurs were at when they started this evolution with Tim Sherwood, of all fucking people, was below where we are now. So we should realistically expect within a couple of years that we can get to that level.
Yeah.
We were on that level.
Well, that's the thing, but we haven't been for a little while. For a couple of seasons.
Since we started having money.
Well, touche.
Coaching as well, right? Like, for all the horrible things I like saying about Spurs, Pochettino could set them up with six centre-backs and still create a ton of chances. Because there's a system, there's a plan, everyone knows what they're doing. They have a few different things they can mix around, right? You know, they can play with a back three, they can play with a back four, whatever. But there's an idea there. There's a plan. To Anita's point, we are not a club that can give the wrong person 50 million. I was a lot more, you know, I'd be a lot happier to kind of just keep Emery out of hope if we had someone like Sven in charge of transfers. You know, the Watford model, which is you have a style of play the club follows.
Yeah.
You have a recruitment system that recruits for that. If the coach or manager can deliver it, great. If they can't, they go. Someone else comes in, they know what they're expected to do, and they deliver. And you can actually plan and sign for the long term. And like, it doesn't really matter in the short term if you've got the wrong manager, because the club keeps going.
Yeah.
We're not Chelsea. We can't, you know, you get rid of Conte and you get a new manager in who wants to play a completely different style of football. So you just
buy him three players.
Yeah. Or an entirely new squad.
Yeah, yeah.
I felt a year ago like we'd accepted that and actually we'd taken a smart approach. We then got rid of the guy we brought in to do it and we replaced him with
nobody.
Literally no one.
Yeah. I mean,
they have contacts. Come on.
Well, this is the thing. We've ended up with a situation where, which is making it so difficult for us as a fan base, not just those of us who attempt to talk about it in an intelligent fashion and fail abysmally, but even just people who have no intention of having discussions about it, because even more than before, which seemed implausible, we have a scenario where no one is saying anything specific at all about anything at the club except for we want to be really good. And we want to try and win things. And you're like...
teams like Brighton.
Well, the thing is, it's like, this is the same. We want to try and win. That's the only thing that have come out, that's come out from any of the hierarchy at the club, including the manager. And you're kind of...
He wanted to get to the Super Bowl or something.
Well, that's... I mean, that's because he knows where that is. But the thing is... You know, if unless you're achieving tangible things on the pitch, then you're hoping, okay, set us a vision. What's the vision? What are we trying to do here? And everyone's just saying, well, we want to win things. Well, that's what everyone who's ever kicked a ball anywhere in the world wants to do, is they want to win. That's why you play sport. You know, I mean, taking part's already nice, and I'm not a particularly competitive person, but I still would like to win. That's definitely my preferred option. I don't turn up intending to lose. So telling us that is not going to get you any fucking brownie points. Thank you very much. We need to hear something else, and it's just nothing's coming out of the club. And I suppose, I mean, this is, if we thought last summer was a big summer, well, hello. This summer's huge, because at least last summer we had the excitement of the transition from the guy who appeared to have lost his mojo. And we had the transition of a new model of boardroom structure theoretically being cemented. Now, both those things have not are fucked. And what are we left with?
It's bigger than that, right, as well. I don't want to overdo it here, but it's potentially a crisis if we don't get this summer right.
Because
this summer, we plug gaps.
Undoubtedly.
If we don't do that right, next year, or over the next 3 years, how many players do we have who are between 28 and 32? That's most of our first team.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we have to replace the players who aren't good enough this year. And over the next two years, we have to replace the players who are good enough.
Yeah.
And if we don't start now and get it right from day one, it's going to be painful.
Project Youth 2.0.
Well, honestly,
but which I think, yeah, well, I think the most of the fan base would buy into that. Actually,
everyone was bought into that. From my understanding, everyone was bought into, we're getting Sven, we're getting an exciting manager, we're going to go and buy the best young players in Europe, and we're going to go again. That, honestly, my understanding was most of the fan base was bought into that. No one was stood there wanting us to spend 100 million on a striker. There was an understanding that we were going to be getting Torreiras and Guendouzis, and in every position, and just trying to find the gems. And that's the Dortmund model, and that's what we were doing.
Yeah.
And it's been thrown out the window, seemingly.
Well, this is the thing, is I suppose this is why this summer's so big, because it seems like what's been going on behind the scenes, and it may have been thrown out the window, but we don't yet know what the club strategy is. I mean, one of the key kind of things that we're clinging on to collectively is the fact that our youth teams, like last year, the under-23s won the league at a canter, and we've seen players make appearances in the first team or do well on loan. As you say, the criminal underuse of Nketiah pisses me off, because every time he has appeared, he's looked like something might happen as a result of it, but that's another question. But and then this year, the under-18s have spanked their league.
which is also a positive. Anita's cat is also commenting on the things. So we do know that for the since the youth crop of, you know, Wilshire and the ill-fated Frimpong and one or two others, this is the best collection of young players has been at the club in a decade, and possibly better than that, because we appear to have a broader range of players with potential first team level in the youth team. So we're going to have to embrace that one way or another, and it'd be stupid not to. Before we kind of go too far away from that, we've actually had some questions from listeners. Yeah. So I think it's only fair that we give those questions some love. So the first one I'm going to ask, just because it's the one that's the closest to what we've been talking about most recently, is someone called Harpalius or at Manali Cream, I think that is. Or Manai Cream, sorry, on Twitter, apologies for getting that wrong, asks, who would be a realistic management appointment if we binned Emery?
Oh, man. You asked that last season, who would be signed before we announced Emery, and I'm still stuck with that. I'm really not sure. I mean, give it to Mertesacker and Ljungberg till the end of the season.
Well, I don't think it'd be sacking Emery today. I think it's sort of in the summer as a suggestion.
It's really a tough decision. I'm honestly really not sure who it would be.
Is it back all at everyone back aboard the Arteta hype train?
Tim Sherwood.
well, he's an Arsenal fan.
it comes back to speculation, right?
Yeah.
You know, you could say Arteta, you could say Ljungberg, you could say Campbell if you want to go down that route. There's no evidence any of them are good enough. You could go, you know, like a Marco Rose, or, you know, going Hasenhüttl's, that ship sailed. But point is, for me, it would be more about what they represent. It'd be more about like a profile of manager rather than anyone in particular. Like, I don't, you know, I watch football, I read about it. I don't really know who is available. I don't really know who we could get, but I want someone who pretty much embodies everything that Emery said he embodied at the start of the season. Like, I just want to see us press. I want to see us attack. I want to see us give youth a go. I don't actually care about results that much if we're doing all of the above. And that's it. Just kind of create something that people can buy into. I want to go and enjoy watching Arsenal again. It's really that simple for me.
I mean, you say Hasenhüttl's ship has sailed, but I mean, really? Could we not get him out of Southampton if we wanted to?
Well, we could. I mean, I don't know if he's necessarily done enough there yet to kind of conclude. It's a nice little stepping stone now. It's probably harder than the role he had in Germany, but yeah, let's see.
I mean, I suppose
I assume you could go and get anyone who's not at a top Champions League side, especially given the wages we pay. We could probably beat pretty much any team outside the top five in Europe for wages.
I mean, I did like watching Nagelsmann in Hoffenheim.
Well, unfortunately, he's just agreed to go to Leipzig next season.
Yeah.
So, what about the understated chap from Ajax, who's, you know, managed to appear out of the shadows into taking his kids to the Champions League final if they get a good result this week.
He is ballsy, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's, you know, like, I don't care how they do. They've got to the semi-finals, great. I hope they go through. I do care how they do in this tie in particular.
Yeah, yeah.
In general, he sent a load of kids out there and they're going up against Real Madrid and Juventus and they want the ball and they're playing five-a-side around some of the best players in the world because they back themselves.
Yes.
And they might fuck up and they might concede, but it doesn't matter because they're going out there with a purpose. Like, that's what we should be doing. Or Dortmund, when they lose games against big teams, but they're actually, you know, they are aware of their status, they are aware of what they exist to do, and it is an identity that is shared throughout the club. And we are not Real Madrid in Barcelona, right? Like, I went to the Bernabeu last weekend, and I was walking around, and it was really impressive, but the biggest takeaway for me there, I was like, we are just so much smaller than this. It is smaller to talk about us competing with teams like this. We might do it one season, however often, but let's get off our high horse, right? At best, we are, you know, of a comparable size, maybe a bit bigger globally than Atletico, but probably worse than them.
Yeah.
You know, we are one of the biggest four clubs in England, like biggest, not best.
Mm.
We're bigger than most Italian teams, but we are not a global superpower of the level of the very best.
Mm.
We're going up against, we're not going to beat City to the title in the next 2 years. We're not going to go and win the Champions League. So we have to believe, you know, we have to have a longer term plan here.
Mm.
Let's be that club that does everything the right way and at least entertains people. And yeah, let's come top four playing good football every year and not dick around making short-term signings and just trying to bore everyone into submission.
So essentially what you're saying is, we can speculate all we want about the manager, but it's the technical director that matters.
Yeah, pretty much. As long as the club is visibly trying to make something that works in the long term and there is an attempt to do things the right way, I really don't care what happens in the short term and how our results go.
Which I suppose is back to the slightly bigger question of identity. You know, Arsenal is a club that the Wenger brand gave, we had an identity, then we completely went 360 in it and took on the Wenger brand, which became a very different identity, but still a very powerful and attractive one. And then as that started to fall apart towards the end, we now find ourselves in a situation where we don't know who we are. And of course, it's very hard for a fan base to feel fully engaged and united and buying into something if that thing hasn't really been clearly identified. And I think it's, you know, symptomatic of the same thing. You know, I always strikes me that we're also one of the few clubs that doesn't have a song. and, you know, when we were winning, we had more songs. They may have been slightly shit songs. They may not have been the level of songs that you hear at other clubs, but we had some. But now you go to the stadium and it's, you know, you might hear, "My Father, Grace, hey, and it's but it's
Arsenal repeatedly.
But it's like without any real belief. Or it might be, "Stand up if you hate," and that's it. That's it, because there's nothing else to feel tangibly attracted to.
Do you know what's so frustrating? Did you go to the first game, Emery's first game?
No.
So I don't know if you can see on TV or in the heart. Basically, the stadium, I haven't seen a stadium like that in years.
Yeah,
everyone was so buzzing. Up for it.
Yeah,
so optimistic. The songs were all out again. We had this thing.
Yeah,
like the last 3 years, everyone had just forgotten, right? Everyone was ready to buy into it all over again, and we like dragged it through the dirt and kind of stamped on it, and we've left it out overnight in the rain, and it's yeah. Just smelly.
Few months later, there were boos at halftime.
Yeah.
And that's not results.
Yeah.
But people bored out of their brains paying however much for tickets and being like, what am I getting?
Yeah, it's one thing like back in the 80s where you were so bored that people used to like try and play games and roaming around passing 5-penny pieces around or pissing in bottles, but at least you're only paying a fiver to get in. Okay, so the next question we have is from Quite the Calamity on Twitter, which is at Q Calamity, but with Calamity spelt with a K. Hey, there we go, kids. What's realistically the best transfer Arsenal can make next season? We seem to be in the mood for these speculatory magical unicorn questions.
I like the word realistically.
Yeah, exactly.
Quite easy to answer if it's not realistic.
I mean, I suppose to try and narrow this question down into something we can actually attempt to answer without spending 3 hours over. Number one positional need, each of you.
Oh.
If you could, if you've got only one player.
Ramsey. I don't know.
Well, that's it's what I'm saying. I'm not asking individual. I'm asking for positional need.
Positional defender.
Okay, is that?
I mean, it has to be a centre back, but. Yeah. I still feel like if you didn't change our defence and gave us a decent wide player who could commit people one-on-one and get 15 plus goals a season, I think we'd have wrapped third up by now. So
yep.
I think you need a good defence to win the league. I think a good attack on its own gets you where we need to be.
Okay.
So if I had to sign one player, I would probably get a wide forward or a winger, not that they exist anymore.
Yeah, I suppose I would actually agree with you. The only way I'd actually consider buying another centre half was if Mustafi gets sent to on a boat or somewhere.
Anyone listening, if you're a scout or you know fan of another club, Mustafi would be a great signing for anyone. By Leverkusen, Roma, if you're listening. proven World Cup winner, dominant in the air, very capable guy. Good hashtags, good fade.
goal threat from set pieces.
Arsenal did not concede from open play against Brighton with him on the pitch. So, yeah, I think I'd be really upset if he went, but I think if anyone's listening and thought, what in a bargain, you know, I'd be reluctant to see him go, but I think it would be a good signing for any club. Literally any club.
Bournemouth, we're calling you.
I'm not watching that much, you know, other leagues, Bundesliga, a few times over the season. And I always tend to, you know, lean towards my Croatian players because I think that they are decent. They are not overpriced as perhaps English players or Spanish or Brazilian even. Mm-hmm. So I'm leaning towards Ante Rebic as well, you know, like possible signing. He wouldn't be expensive. He's a good winger, good player. He just opened his stat. He has 9 goals and 4 assists in Bundesliga this season. I mean, I really like him as a player as well. So I thought that maybe, like, you know, wild card signing, something like that. I mean, we did go for Perisic, tried to sign Perisic last season. That was just...
Do you think if we'd signed Perisic, he would have done exactly what we've used Kolasinac to do? Literally, just someone who is actually a natural winger playing that role.
But he can kick it with both feet.
And with end product.
He can kick it with both feet, which Kolasinac can't. I'd quite like Rebic just because he brings some of the nutter factor.
Yeah, he is.
Like, we haven't had any proper head cases at Arsenal for a while, and he's a bit of a mad fucker. So that, you know,
he used to be even mad, even crazier. But Niko Kovac, while he was at Frankfurt, he really did well. He trained him well, and he's much much better player now.
Yeah, it's true.
He's still what, 25.
Something like that, yeah, that's about right. Because he wasn't very successful at Fiorentina, and then things worked out better for him. Okay, well, I'm going to ask another question we've been sent, which is a directly related one, because I know time is pressing. It's from FC at FC ABRAO, so at FC Abrao, I guess. I view defence as our biggest problem and centre-back, left-back as our biggest priority. We must sell, and I say Mustafi, ignore that, any buyers, Mkhitaryan, should be first to go. Mickey, wages are too high. With that transfer outlook, can we improve without buying a winger and give Nelson or Saka a real chance?
So, just to go back, he said the priority was replacing half our defence.
Well, a centre-back and a left-back, which... Which if we had a Pep Guardiola pot of money, I think people would probably agree with on the whole. but he says if basically we're going to be spending our money on defence, is it worth putting Nelson and as a fully first-fledged first teamer and giving Saka more games? Hot take. What do you reckon, kids?
Nelson did okay on his loan, but he didn't play as much as perhaps some would hope. But when he did show up, he did okay, did well in Hoffenheim team. I'm not sure if he's, you know, still the first team player. I see him something like Iwobi, you know, either starting and then getting subbed off or coming on later in the match. But I wouldn't go for him as, you know, first choice. And I'm not sure about Saka.
For me, it depends what you want. Like, fair. I view wingers or these wide players as a fundamental to how you play. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you want to go with this two up top system that we have and expect our strikers to do everything, then yeah, you can have kind of Nelson in the as an option to give us width, you know, almost just someone who hugs the touchline and provides that width so we have a different shape. Mm. If you have a philosophy that, you know, if you're Pep and you want your wide players to play every week and stretch teams and get you 10, 15 goals a season, it's probably too early for someone like Nelson, and I think you're asking too much. Mm-hmm. they're really talented for their level. Are they ready to, you know, they could do a Hudson-Odoi, they could go and play X number of games in Europe and, I don't know, 10 starts in the league, and maybe do better if they play more, and you'll only know by playing them. But I think it's a big bet to make. I would rather sign a first choice winger, mm-hmm. and use Mavropanos or Holding as young centre backs coming through than sign a first choice centre back and use those wingers. I think the centre backs are a bit more ready. Like, we're not good enough. They're good enough unless we use them. I don't think we've got a lot to lose. I think we need to find out if these young players are good enough. If they are, get them in the team and play. And if they're not, they go next year. So that's how I'd lean.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm with you. I think, as it has been for about 3 or 4 years, as anyone that's heard Sylvain on these podcasts would know, we just need one really established, high-quality wide player. Preferably who can play on the left, so we don't have Kolasinac as our only fucking option on the left, but one that plays on the right would also be very welcome. But, you know, that would give us both the tactical flow options, but without making those tactical options rest solely on players who are developing. You know, I mean, it may seem harsh on Iwobi, but Iwobi's a player that we're still trying to really work out what his best role is, and clearly end product is not necessarily his finest thing. As we know with Iwobi, his finishing and his final ball are erratic. It's his transfer of ball up the park is his greatest strength, and maybe that's better utilised in a different role in a different formation, maybe even as a slightly more adventurous part in a midfield three or something like that. You know, there are other options with Iwobi. So that would be my priority. But obviously, if we do sell Mustafi or Mkhitaryan, or remove ourselves of their services, shall we say, then obviously those players will need to be replaced.
Queuing up, and Mustafi manages to pry him away.
Yeah, I mean, the bidding war starts here, kids. I'm gonna start with an open bid of a fiver. And hopefully we can ramp it up from there. You know, maybe we can start a quick starter campaign to help some small lower league club make their crucial leadership signing. Who knows?
I mean, given it's so obvious to us that we should probably accept bids for both of them, do you trust the club to move both of those players on?
I suppose it ultimately depends on what other business they can do. You know, do you sell them before you buy someone and then let them go at a cheaper price because you need to, because that's what we've done before? Or do you wait for someone to bid for them before you start making moves? I think that's probably dangerous. I mean, again, so much fucking depends on whether we win the Europa League, because suddenly our transfer budget doubles. And suddenly we can attract different sorts of players who we'd be competing with for clubs at a similar level to ourselves, and have them something more tangible to offer them, other than just first team football at a slightly higher level than they may already be playing at. So I think, don't
underestimate our ability to pay a lot more than most clubs.
Oh yeah, no, I'm talking about the ability for us to get those players ahead of other clubs of a similar level of financial capacity. You know, let's face it, we wanted to make sure that if a player is choosing between us and Spurs, he doesn't go to Spurs. To use an obvious example.
I don't think there are any clubs around our level who can match us on wages.
Probably not, but then at the same time, we don't want to be letting our inflationary wage bill game that we've been playing over the last few years to continue unabated, because we've already got a situation where we're letting someone like Aaron Ramsey leave on a free because we can't pay his wages. We're letting Danny Welbeck leave on a free because his wages cost too much. Yeah, exactly. I'm just avoiding having... Yeah. I've banned any conversation at this point of the Aaron Ramsey tier-in, because we will have that later on in the season. Is that for tears or for other activities? I'm not going to go there. But yeah, no, I don't want to open up the whole "oh my god, Aaron's going boohoo" moment, because we're going to have that all fucking summer.
Let me ask a question.
Okay.
Do you think we need to pull a Liverpool and sell one player for a big load of money in order to get bigger transfer budget over this summer?
Have you just opened the Lacazette elephant in the room box?
Yes.
Because we've been hearing a shitload of stuff about Barcelona wanting to buy him, and he's been our player of the year, and he's still got a resale fee because he's not ancient. And
70 million.
He'd be a good signing for them as a backup to Suarez. But if you were us, and you had to sell one, which striker would you sell?
Aubameyang.
Yeah,
if you look at it realistically from the club's point of view, Lacazette would definitely, probably, even definitely bring more money.
There's been rumours about sort of 85 million being offered from Barcelona, and hey, we all know if Barcelona really, really want a player, they'll pay more than he's worth. I guess it's a tricky one because, again, so much depends on if we get that Champions League place, what do we need to do to generate transfer funds?
I think there's a bit of an overlap here because, you know, Aubameyang's 30 in June.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
He's currently 29, just to clarify. And if you said you can have two top strikers or one top striker, and to your point, a top wide player, I just feel like most clubs would go for the latter. Like, I don't buy into the assumption that selling one of our strikers means we lose attacking threat. I think a lot of people have said we're so reliant on both of them, we can't let either go.
Mm.
If you replace one of them the right way, it should improve us as a team.
I suppose the question is how important to the squad makeup and our performances going forward do we think the fact that Lacazette actually appears to have a pair of bollocks compared to half of the rest of our squad?
He definitely deserves a player of the season.
For me, if Barcelona put £100 million on the table, I'd take the money because we need a squad renewal, and it's not a bad business model. I'd be very sad to take the money, but I'd do it.
I mean, where we are, every player in our squad has to be for sale at a given price.
Yeah, and obviously the younger players, their sale value would obviously have to be much greater. You know, there's absolutely no merit in us selling Hector Bellerin for 40 million. Pointless. Assuming
I would take, if you said you could sell him for 90, get Wan-Bissaka for 45.
Yeah, then that's a different question.
You're going to have to consider it.
Yeah, but, of course.
Otherwise, no, and I feel like he's probably our next captain if he stays. So.
Yeah.
And also, like, he is like the most kind of uber trendy, cool with it, social issues man in our squad, which means, you know, hey, at least we can make a fuckload of money on social media metrics. I've got one last question, which is because I know that JB's got to go, and frankly, we've been going on for quite a while, but I have one last question, which may not be the most difficult question to answer. It's from Frankie Hobbs, at Frankie _ Hobbs, saying, do you go to the gym? I don't know which one of us that's aimed at, so I figure all three of us can take a shot at answering that question. I shall go first. No, I don't go to the gym. I have been to the gym twice in my life. The last time was in 1997, and I fucking hated it. That said, I'm still pretty fit and healthy. So that's my answer.
Anita.
I go to trainings, not, you know, gym weightlifting, but group trainings. So twice a week. Oh.
See, Anita's a better person than me, boys and girls.
I think that's what we can infer.
Yeah. I'm willing to take it. I mean, anyone who's followed us both on Twitter knows that's the truth.
Come on.
Well, okay. And now for you, sir. Is this a complicated answer?
This is going to be a shock. I have actually not been to the gym for something like 4 hours now.
are you getting a craving? Are you craving?
I'm quite tired right now from the time I went to the gym earlier.
Are you refueling? Are you okay? Have you been like on your raw chicken?
I'm quite hungry.
As a matter of interest, do any of you know Frankie Hobbs, or is that just
I do know Frankie.
Okay, that's good.
Great guy. I appreciate the question. I think it's important to keep people informed. You know, for many people out there that also go to the gym.
Well, also, we're representing a broad cross-section here. You know, we've got different nationalities, we've got different ethnicities, we've got different gym habits. I mean, we are fucking the 21st century right here, kids.
I'm proud of us. I think this is a moment.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, they should just make us the Arsenal board, because we'd be more representative of the diversity amongst the fan base than anyone else at the club.
And we would sell Mustafi.
Yeah. And make Hector captain, but make it... After, you know, Koscielny stops being, obviously. Whenever.
Do you think... One last one. I know I need to go.
But yeah, anyway. Okay. Well, hey, I mean, if you're willing to stay, we can keep going for as long as you like. Shoot.
Do you think there's a chance that if we win the Europa League, Koscielny will retire?
Oh. I hope not. I mean, that would open a whole other problem.
I don't think so, because, one, he's got a year left back on his contract, and he's already stated his desire to either see out that year or go back to France and play a year in France. But I suppose it depends on how fucked his legs are.
Because, I mean, people have pointed out, he can't run properly anymore. I don't know, like, if you've seen it in games, but every time he sprints now,
yeah,
he struggles after.
Yeah, the last two games, he's clearly been playing not fit. I mean, that's the thing.
He'll still be our best centre-back, which is not great.
No. And the question is... You know, the fact is, we never expected him to play as much as he did this season. Even when we became clear that he'd rediscovered some form, we thought, OK, he's going to get the big games, he might get once a week. But the problem is all other centre-halves have been out getting themselves injured or fucking suspended, so he's had to play every game. And I thought until the last couple of weeks, or 3 weeks, he was looking OK. But the last 3 weeks, he's been struggling, for sure. And I guess it's whether down to the prognosis of whether that's a struggle that's just how it's going to be for right now, or is it just like the struggle because you've been overused because the squad's fucked? And I guess, without being Mr. Medical, I don't know the answer to that one. But personally, I don't think he will, because I think as long as his health isn't completely fucked, I think if he leaves, he'll go back and spend a year in France playing there. Okay, well, we're all kind of nodding sagely and looking slightly morbid. So that's probably a good time to finish. I guess the only thing to ask is, we've got an away game against Valencia this week at the Mestalla. Scoreline predictions. Don't worry, there's no money on it, and I won't hold you to it. You just get to be smug if you're right. So
2-1 for us.
2-1 to Arsenal. Ooh, yeah, very confident. Scorers?
Lacazette and Ezo.
Ooh. JB.
2-1 to Valencia.
And who's going to get our goal to stop us crapping ourselves?
Mustafi.
Coquelin own goal. Well, I was actually going to go for 1-1 with our goal being scored by Mustafi. And possibly their goal scored by Mustafi. It's a Mustafi who thought us. It is the Mustafi show.
Header.
Petr Cech. Oh, wouldn't that be great? 2-1 injury time, our goal scoring when Cech comes up for a corner and it bounces off the helmet and it's in, and there's a massive FIFA conversation about, is it illegal because it's not actually off his skin?
I think that will happen now. So.
Good.
I'll be digging out this recording.
Make it so. There's a Trekkie reference for those of you who are as sad as me. Good. Okay. Well, thank you once again, JB. Thank you, Anita. Thank you, listeners, if you've got this far. If you have, frankly, well done. You deserve a prize. I haven't a prize to give you, but take that knowledge and run with it. And speaking of running, JB's going to run away. So goodbye, JB.
Goodbye.
Oh, we got a bit of an Ozil moment there. Beautiful. Beautiful. goodbye, Anita. Thanks again, all the way from Croatia, as always.
So fun.
And goodbye, listeners, because we're all going. I'm going too. We'll speak to you next week, and hopefully we'll have something interesting to say into your ears, and hopefully we'll have made it to the Europa League final, so we have something positive to talk about, rather than just how we're going to try and play some kids away at Burnley and hope they don't get the shit kicked out of them, because that's basically what awaits us otherwise. So, with that in mind, hope that you all have pleasant weather wherever you are. And eat nice food tonight. Okay, take care. Goodbye.
That was fun.
Yeah, obviously it was very emotional. It's been a hell of a journey. And 11 years of my life. So so much has happened in that. And yeah, when I look back, yeah, you can tell by my voice how much it means to me. So I'm just grateful for the opportunity to play for this great club and spent so many years